Welcome to Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Ashkan Kazarian, Legal and Research Fellow at Tech Freedom. On today's show, we will chat about net neutrality. Net neutrality are two words that majority of tech and telecom policy folks see in their nightmares at this point. This debate has been going on for years, and we're about to enter a new chapter of this high-stakes melodrama next week when FCC votes on Chairman Pai's proposal called Restoring Internet Freedom. We have the honor of hosting FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr on our show today to discuss hard questions that are in front of the commission. Commissioner, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with what net neutrality rules are and what will happen next week if the commission votes in favor of Chairman Pai's proposal.
So the concept of net neutrality, if you ask people to define it, you're going to get a lot of different answers. As it's presented to us right now at the commission, what we are going to vote on next week is repealing the FCC's 2015 decision to classify internet access service as a Title II telecom service. There are a lot of reasons why the internet is free and open today, and there's a lot of reasons why it was free and open well prior to the 2015 decision. Those reasons that we have a free internet, those things that people associate with net neutrality, are going to continue to stay in place after this decision. Again, I think it's important to remember that we're going back to the 2015 regulatory regime under which consumers were protected, the internet flourished. So I think there's a lot of misinformation about what exactly Title II does and how it relates to what we've always had, which is a free and open internet.
So I'm a consumer. If restoring internet freedom goes into power, hypothetically, let's say I have Comcast, and Comcast owns both Hulu and NBC, and I feel like watching Gilmore Girls. Both Hulu and Netflix have a show on, but Hulu loads way faster in my apartment. How would it be addressed in the new world? Post-Title II era?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the 2015 decision was sort of a massive and unprecedented regulatory overreach. And during this two-year detour with Title II, we've seen a number of negative consequences. First of all, investment in broadband infrastructure has declined. And that's the first time that's happened outside of a recession. That negatively impacts consumers. Second of all, we have affidavits filed by broadband providers that show that they have pulled back on investment. So for instance, they were going to deploy a new antenna site or extend fiber, and they've filed with the commission under oath and said, we pulled back on those investments because of the Title II decision and the regulatory overhang associated with it. And then third, there's innovative new products that ISPs were looking to introduce that they put the brakes on as a result of Title II. The FCC's decision walks through them. Some of them have to do with in-home Wi-Fi. Another piece of it was free data for consumers, that was put in the crosshairs by the FCC's Title II decision. So I think from a consumer perspective, what you're going to see the day after the decision, the weeks after, the months after, the years after, is no negative consequence on consumers. But what you're going to see is they continue to be protected, but we get rid of those negative consequences we saw with Title II, which will mean more investment and more deployment, and that will inure to the benefit of consumers.
John Oliver, one of the main reasons this debate has been very public, has brought up the 2014 Netflix example, where Netflix had to reach an agreement with Comcast to go back to their normal streaming speed. Was this addressed or prosecuted? Because to the best of my knowledge, it wasn't.
It's a good question. So we're not going to a world by repealing Title II in which all legal protections are eliminated, or a world in which the ISPs are free to engage in any anti-competitive conduct you want. There's a number of reasons for that. I'll just highlight one that is perhaps the most relevant to your question, which is the federal antitrust laws continue to apply. So Section 2 of the Sherman Act applies to vertically integrated ISPs. So if they enter into an agreement to anti-competitively favor their own content over an unaffiliated content, then that's going to be unlawful under Section 2 of the Sherman Act. So again, the reason we're not seeing a lot of these harms that people are hypothesizing are going to happen after repeal Title II is not because of Title II. Title II is not the one bulwark between us and some Mad Max version of the internet. There are reasons why the internet works today. It's not because of Title II. Again, think back to 2015. That experience that we had then, in terms of the regulatory protections, the market-based protections, those stay in place so that consumers will be protected from exactly the situation that you talked about.
Who would police this behavior if restoring internet freedom passes?
It's a good question. So first and foremost, if you look at the DC Circuit decision that reviewed the 2015 decision, what they said is that ISPs today under Title II are free to block, to discriminate, to engage in paid prioritization, provided that they disclose that conduct. So with respect to all of that activity, we're not actually changing the legality of doing it per se. What we are doing is we are going to make sure that there's consumer protections in place. So first, you have the Federal Trade Commission. With the FCC's 2015 decision, it stripped the Federal Trade Commission of 100% of its authority to protect consumers. We're putting that authority back. So that'll be a cop on the beat for consumers. Another piece of that is online privacy. Again, when the FCC classified Internet Access Service as a Title II service that stripped the FTC's privacy authority, the FTC is the nation's premier online privacy enforcement agency. They brought over 500 enforcement actions related to online privacy, including against ISPs, before their authority was stripped by the FCC. So consumers are gaining a lot by this decision in terms of putting the FTC back in charge. And again, they look at broad swaths of the economy, everything from edge providers to outside of the internet space. And so the Federal Trade Commission is very well equipped to protect consumers here.
I have a few questions on that. FCC commissioners seem to be upstanding public servants with good senses of humor. Why don't you guys want to do this?
It's a good question. So there's really two things that are going on here, one of which we don't talk a lot in sort of the public domain, which is the legal authority issue. There is a threshold legal determination that we have to make, which is when Congress passed the Communications Act, when it amended it in 1996, did it intend, does the statute properly classify Internet Access Service as a Title I information service or a Title II information service? For decades, for 20 years, there was agreement, bipartisan agreement, that Internet Access Service is a Title I information service. Once you make that determination, that means that the FTC is back as the cop on the beat. And so again, almost regardless of what you think about the policy here, is this a right thing? Is it a wrong thing? There's a threshold legal decision that we have to make. I also happen to think the policy counsels in favor of putting the FTC back on the beat here, but there's also a threshold legal decision that even if we want to do exercise Title II authority, in my view, the best reading of the statute, which is not the same thing as the Chevron deference that applies in court, but the best reading of the statute is that it's a Title I information service as the commission held for decades before.
Your answer puzzles me a little bit because very recently, FTC Commissioner McSweeney tweeted out that FTC doesn't actually have authority over that. So what would you say in response?
I would say that tweet puzzled me as well. So here's the reality. The FTC brought a lawsuit against AT&T having to do with AT&T's throttling, or at least alleged throttling of consumers, and whether it was disclosed consistent with net neutrality rules. A panel of the Ninth Circuit reached a decision that suggested or held that the FTC would not have authority over ISPs, even if the FCC reclassified broadband as a Title I service. When I was a general counsel of the FCC, we filed a letter with the Ninth Circuit urging them to reverse that panel decision on the grounds that it was the wrong result as a matter of law. I don't think it was necessarily because of the letter we filed, but the Ninth Circuit then granted rehearing, which effectively vacated that panel decision. So today, the law of the land is as soon as we reverse Title II, the FTC is once again fully vested with authority. So that's sort of how that has played out up till now. But right now, the only thing standing in the way of the FTC having authority to protect consumers when it comes to ISPs is our Title II decision.
Net neutrality has attracted an unprecedented amount of comments. There is reporting that 50,000 comments have gone missing, and also that there are a few hundred thousand comments from the same address in Russia, which I promise wasn't me. And I actually looked at those comments, and they're all the ones that I've seen were pro-net neutrality. Based on this, Commissioner Rosenworcel have called upon the commission to slow down the process and delay the vote that is supposed to happen next week. We heard the same ask from New York Attorney General. How do you address their concern and their request?
Yeah, so if you step back, a lot of what we're seeing is a function of the commission has an open comment process, which is that anybody can submit anything they want in the record. We don't do a filtering function on the front end. This is the same procedure that the FCC used in 2015, and we saw some of the same thing back then. But again, when you step back at our decision, we're governed by the Administrative Procedure Act. Those are the processes we have to follow. The first question we have, as I mentioned, is a threshold legal determination. Is it Title I or is it Title II? So to some extent, the sort of comments, the extent that they go to the policy issue, aren't necessarily relevant to that legal determination that we have to make. And then when you go to the policy side of it, our obligation under the APA is to make sure that we've reviewed our record and that we have responded one way or the other to all of the substantive major points that are raised in the docket, which we've done. And all the evidence that we're actually relying on from the docket, people can see those comments that we're relying on, that those studies, those evidence that we're relying on, and it is substantial. And it's been, there are points that we are allowed to rely on. Beyond that, if people have put comments in the record, it doesn't undermine the legality of our decision. Again, we're governed by the Administrative Procedure Act. People are welcome to file whatever they want in the record. In fact, there's limits under the APA and what we could do to take things out of the record. So people put whatever they want in the record. We make our legal decisions. We follow the process that's required under the law. And that's what we've done here. There's no reason at all to delay or otherwise have those comments undermine what the FCC is doing.
There has been a lot of rhetoric making this debate even more intense. I've heard multiple times an argument that women won't be able to organize if restoring internet freedom goes into effect, that children won't be able to do their homework. I mean, I was able to do homework before Title II existed, but care to comment?
Yeah, look, there is a lot of rhetoric out there, heated rhetoric, that is resulting in people reaching conclusions that are simply not correct. Again, I would urge people to think back 2 years to 2015. That is the world from a regulatory perspective that we're going back to. This is not an experiment in some radical new free market approach to internet regulation. It's about going back to an established, a tried and true regulatory framework in which none of these bad things that people are talking about happen. I get the passion, there is no doubt. Look, we're talking about the intersection of the government and the internet. If that doesn't get people fired up, then I don't know what will, and they should express their views. But I do think a lot of what we've seen has moved into hysterics at this point. I mean, I've received a note from a high school ex-girlfriend who I had not heard from in many, many years. Essentially telling me that I was about to make the second biggest mistake of my life by voting for this thing. But neither the earlier decision nor the one next week are mistakes.
There is a lot to unpack there. The fact that commissioners are treated as politicians is troubling. And I'm really sorry about that ghost from the past. Let's talk about something more positive. Your focus, even before you became commissioner, has been wireless. And Chairman Pai has given you the lead on this issue recently. As I started looking into this wireless area of telecom policy, I came upon an initiative called Twilight Towers. It sounded very teenage angsty. Do you mind telling our listeners what it is?
Yeah. So wireless infrastructure is a really important proceeding that we have at the commission, and it's actually a collection of a number of different proceedings that we're looking at. Stepping back to the most fundamental level, we are in the middle of a transition, starting a transition from 4G wireless, which most people are familiar with, to 5G. And in other parts of the country, we're trying to get to 4G. One of the keys to doing that is making sure our regulatory frameworks are tailored for this new type of deployment. Right now, we have relatively few, relatively speaking, antenna sites in the country, roughly 300,000. We need to go to over 1 million in the next couple of years to meet this 4G to 5G, the small cell transition. Our regulatory structures that are in place right now, in my mind, are not set up to process that scale of a deployment. So we're looking at a lot of ways to streamline it. We took our first action in this proceeding last month, which was called a pole swap out order, essentially to make it easier and faster to replace poles so that those poles can hold new wireless infrastructure. This month, next week, as you note, we will be voting on a Twilight Tower items. And this is an interesting one that's been kicking around for over a decade. And so I'm glad that we're able to move forward on it. Essentially, there was a period of time, roughly 2001 to 2005, where wireless towers were being constructed, and they didn't necessarily go through or at least have documentation that they went through a particular type of environmental or historic review. As a result of that, ever since 2005, providers have been unable to add antennas to those existing towers because of that period of time, that twilight period in which it wasn't clear, or at least they didn't have documentation of complying. So we finally solved that, and we opened those towers up, which could be 4,000, 8,000 towers, to additional co-locations, which is great for consumers, and it's also great from a environmental historic preservation perspective because you can use existing infrastructure rather than needing to build new towers. So this is an incremental step, but I think, you know, when you put together all the steps we're taking to streamline wireless infrastructure deployment, it's going to have a real positive impact.
You've said that access to more spectrum is key to ensuring continued U.S. leadership in wireless. Can you talk about the Commission's recent efforts on that front? What additional steps you'd like to take to make sure U.S. stays a leader?
Yeah, we have a lot of different proceedings ongoing on the spectrum side. They're all really important. One that I'll highlight is we launched a proceeding earlier this year on a broad swath of spectrum between 3 gigahertz and 24 gigahertz. It's a notice of inquiry. We're looking for comment on which bands in here do people think have the potential for us to open up. Apart from that one, the 3 to 24 gigahertz, we're also looking at continuing to look at spectrum above 24 gigahertz, which is where at least some 5G applications people are looking to use that spectrum. We've already opened up about 13 gigahertz of spectrum above 24 gigahertz, and we have a lot more spectrum as well that's currently teed up that I'm hoping we will be able to move forward into the commercial marketplace as well. So when you look at the future, it's going to require the streamlining of the infrastructure. It's going to require more spectrum. And actually, a third piece of it that I've been starting to talk a little bit about is the skills gap. So when you talk about deploying potentially millions of small cells, I've heard from providers right now that say we don't have the workforce in place that can deploy that massive new amount of infrastructure. So I've been doing some work with the Department of Labor on apprenticeship programs. There's no direct regulatory role for me at the FCC or for the commission generally, but I do think we should be speaking to the issue, highlighting the issue, and seeing how we can get these apprenticeships moving so we have the workforce in place to get that 5G transition across the finish line.
That's fascinating work. And to wrap up the show, I have two questions. First, what would you want listeners to take away from a lot of information we just gave them? And second, what is your 2018 resolution as FCC commissioner?
Good question. So I think, you know, most fundamentally, I'll go back to where we started, which is the Title II decision is very different than ending the internet or ending the concept of net neutrality. We're going back to the 2015 regime, an Obama-era regime under which consumers were protected, the internet flourished, we saw great investment without the harms that we've seen during this two-year detour to heavy-handed regulation. And as I look to 2018, after we get through this vote, I'm going to really put almost all of my effort inside the building at the FCC on this wireless infrastructure proceeding. Again, there's many aspects of it, and I want to move as quickly as we can because those millions of new deployments, we're just starting to see them right now. And so I think we've got to get the regulatory structures reformed so that we can facilitate that deployment throughout 2018 and going forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Carr, for joining Tech Policy Podcast for the first time. We hope you'll return in the future. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom, and let us know what you think of the show and how unbearable my accent is in your reviews on iTunes. It will help others find the show.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.